Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 12. Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead. Text number 18.
Bhaktim haro Bhagavati pravahanna jashram.
Bhaktim haro Bhagavati
Ananda baspa kalaya muhu hajamanna.
Ananda baspa kalaya muhu hajamanna.
Viklidjamana hridaya pulakachitangho.
Viklidjamana hridaya
Atmanam asmaraj asviti muktalingha.
Atmanam asmaraj muktalingha.
Bhaktim haro Bhagavati pravahan ajasham.
Bhaktim haro Bhagavati
pravahan ajasham. Ananda baspa kalaya moho ajamanna.
Ananda baspa kalaya moho ajamanna.
Vikhridjamanna hridaya pulaka chitangho.
Vikhridjamanna hridaya pulaka
chitangho. Nadmanam asmaraj asviti muktalingha.
Bhaktim, devotional service.
Haro
unto Hari, Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Pravahan,
constantly engaging in,
Ajasram, always,
Ananda,
blissful,
Baspakalaya,
by a stream of tears,
Muhu,
again and again,
Ajimanaha,
becoming overcome,
Vikrijimanaha,
melting,
Hridaya,
his heart,
Pulaka,
standing of hairs,
Achitta,
covered,
Anga,
his body,
Na,
not,
Atmanam,
body,
Asmarat,
he remembered,
Aso,
he,
Iti,
thus,
Muktalinga,
free from the subtle body.
Translation.
Because of his transcendental bliss, incessant tears flowed from his eyes, his heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of the hairs all over his body. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, and thus he immediately became liberated from material bondage. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Due to constant engagement in devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the deity, etc., as prescribed in 9 varieties, there are different symptoms which appear in the body of a devotee. These 8 bodily transformations, which indicate that a devotee is already liberated within himself, are called Ashtasattvika Vikara. When a devotee completely forgets his bodily existence, he should be understood to be liberated. He is no longer encaged in the body. The example given that when a coconut becomes completely dry, the coconut pulp within the coconut shell separates from the bondage of the shell and the outer covering. By moving the dry coconut, one can hear that the pulp within is no longer attached to the shell or to the covering. Similarly, when one is fully absorbed in devotional service, he is completely disconnected from the two material coverings, the subtle and gross bodies. Dhruva Maharaj actually attained this stage of life by constantly discharging devotional service. He has already been described as a Mahabhagavata, for unless one becomes a Mahabhagavata or a first-class pure devotee, these symptoms are not visible. Lord Chaitanya exhibited all these symptoms. The core Haridas also exhibited them. And there are many pure devotees who manifested such bodily symptoms. They are not to be imitated, but when one is actually advanced, these symptoms are exhibited. At that time, it is to be understood that a devotee is materially free. Of course, from the beginning of devotional service, the path of liberation immediately opens. Just as the coconut taken from the tree immediately begins to dry, it simply takes some time for the shell and pulp to separate from one another. An important word in this verse is mukta linga. Mukta means liberated, and linga means the subtle body. When a man dies, he quits his gross body, but the subtle body of mind, intelligence and ego carries him to a new body. While existing in the present body, the same subtle body carries him from one stage of life to another. For example, from childhood to boyhood, by mental development. The mental condition of a baby is different from that of a boy. The mental condition of a boy is different from that of a young man. And the mental condition of a young man is different from that of an old man. So at death, the process of changing bodies takes place due to the subtle body. The mind, intelligence, and ego carry the soul from one gross body to another. This is called transmigration of the soul. But there is another stage when one becomes liberated even from the subtle body. At that time, the living entity is competent and fully prepared to be transferred to the transcendental or spiritual world. The description of the bodily symptoms of Sri Dhruva Maharaj makes it apparent that he became perfectly fit to be transferred to the spiritual world. One can experience the distinction between the subtle and gross bodies even daily. In a dream, one's gross body is lying on the bed, while the subtle body carries the soul, the living entity, to another atmosphere. But because the gross body has to be continued, the subtle body comes back and settles in the present gross body. Therefore, one has to become free from the subtle body also. This freedom is known as mukta linga. I'll just read the translation again. Because of his transcendental bliss, incessant tears flowed from his eyes. His heart melted, and there was shivering and standing of the hairs all over his body. Thus transformed in a trance of devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj completely forgot his bodily existence, and thus he immediately became liberated from from material bondage. So Srila Prabhupada points out this important word in this verse, mukta linga. And mukta meaning liberated, and linga meaning the subtle body. So the subtle body, of course, is the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. So each one, you know, more subtle than the other. The mind has the business of accepting and rejecting, thinking, feeling, and willing. So the senses gather information, and the mind accepts all that information, and the little computation goes on there, and there is a you know, a sense of what may bring happiness and what may bring distress. You know, what is one may feel happy or one may feel distress according to the sensory information coming to the mind, and one may then you know, make a decision that you know, I wish to reduce my suffering or increase my happiness, and I'll, with my intelligence, I will use my senses to you know, interact with you know, my environment as I'm getting this knowledge coming in like this. So we had that, and because the ego, we are identifying ourselves that I am this body like this, so that the false ego. Actually, Krishna says in the Gita that material existence is actually a place of misery. That we have to learn. That's something we don't know. You know, in this world, people don't know that. They actually have to learn it. That, you know, this world is a place of misery. Everyone is thinking that this is a place where I can be happy somehow or another, and I can use my intelligence, my senses, and I will be happy. But actually, everything is a constant source of misery. Just like the material universe is actually a place of darkness. You constantly have to light it up. That its natural state is darkness. So, you know, we have to wait for the sun to come up or the moon at night. You have to have some lighting. You're constantly trying to combat the darkness, which is the state of the universe like that. So, so much difficulty. So, you know, we have a power problem because, you know, we have to work very hard. Actually, some people work a full-time job just to keep the lights on these days. Such a problem it is. Otherwise, you know, lights out. I remember going to visit a devotee one time in Adelaide, and I went there in the evening, and I knocked on the door. He said, come in. And I sat in, and the whole house was in darkness. I said, do I turn the lights on? What happened? He said, oh no, I have no money. So he had to live in the darkness. So no money, you live in the darkness. So, you know, so similarly, you know, actually this universe is a place of misery. So, for instance, we may think now that we're very happy because we are warm. Actually, it is very cold, and there's it creates a suffering condition. Very difficult condition. So we have to combat that. So we have to put on the warm clothes, and we have to get out of the cold air. We have to come in and, you know, inside In this way, we're taking it as a place of happiness, but actually, what we see as happiness is that somehow we've made, made some adjustment to, keep away the misery of the bitter cold. Too much of the cold gradually, very, very difficult. So, whatever we're doing in this world, we're actually in a place of misery, and we keep trying to keep the misery away. And as we do that, we say, yes, now I'm happy like that. So, but it's actually a place of misery. So the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego, that is the subtle body, and dealing with the misery material existence, and because of the illusory nature of this material existence, that constant struggle, if we can just keep our head above the water, then we are happy. Like that. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it gives this example of happiness. That sometimes when someone is being punished, they take them and they dunk their head in the water, their whole body, and they wait till they can barely breathe, and their lungs feel like they're going to explode, and their head feels like they're going to explode, and they feel like they're going to die and lose everything. And then, at the last second, just literally about to die, they pull their head out of the water and they take a breath. Now I'm happy. So the happiness in the material world, in the Chaitanya, it's like that. You can keep your head, if you can get the occasional breath, you keep the misery away enough, then that is happiness. So, still, therefore an intelligent person, we follow, Srila Prabhupada says, we follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. What does that mean? Prahlad Maharaj, he considered that a terrifying prospect is that again I have to come back in another body. This is something that's a terrible proposition, to come back in another body in the material world. He understood that would not be his position, because he had been given the process of hearing and chanting, which he can do anywhere at any time. And so he understood that, he didn't have that problem. But the prospect, without the hearing and the chanting, the devotional service of the Lord, he understood that this prospect of just continually coming back in this cycle of birth, death, old age and disease was a terrible thing. Just like, everyone in this world, if we don't have some apartment to live in, then we really experience the suffering, the miseries of material existence. And without some house, apartment to live in. But we can only get an apartment according to what we can afford. And we always understand that if I'm living somewhere, sometimes, one may be in the Brahmachari ashram, so Grihastas have a home somewhere. Still, we're always in the thought of, in the back of our mind, what happens is if I lose this apartment. Of course, a well-trained devotee, they don't, they always know that Krishna will. If they're Krishna conscious, they always understand that Krishna will look after them. That's not an issue. But an arrangement must be had, that we must have a place to sleep and keep out of the conditions of the weather. And therefore, the thoughts come in the mind that if this apartment that I'm in now, at some stage, the lease is up, or the landlord is selling the place, or I won't be able to afford, or lose, I have to transfer to another place, then we're always considering that how much, you know, I will have to get some, be able to afford something. I have to do either work for that or give some money or something to be able to get that in this place. Changing body is like that, but no, generally no one is thinking that when I give up this body, which is like this is where the soul is residing. So if we get the human form of life, you know, there is some ability to you know, make some arrangement in this place of misery to you know, find some relief from the miseries of material existence. But you know, you get down into the animal kingdom, you know, very, very different situation. And the body that they exist, then one is you know, forced to live in very, very bad conditions. So and in this lifetime, as a human being, we have the opportunity that if we can adjust our consciousness, that will determine what is the next body I take. So we hear from the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, from the very beginning of Krishna's instructions, he explains to Arjuna, you have to think in terms of being a spirit soul, not the body. So you're an eternal spirit soul, you're not the body. Think from that platform. So then the next instruction is that as a spirit soul, if I can engage in the transcendental service of the personality of Godhead, dedicating all my usual duties and activities in this world to the personality of Godhead, that will guarantee that the next apartment or the next body I take, well, minimum, I will not go into the animal kingdom like that, but at least I will be, you know, get the human form of life, you know, or more. That is the minimum. You know, that just from a little advancement, if one takes to a little bit of devotional service, a little bit of bhakti, that can be guaranteed. Like that. So that is the very beginning teachings of Krishna consciousness. And, at least that is there. And Srila Prabhupada you know, describes here that there's a this is here is another purple. No, I might have read it in the previous purple. So that you know, if one makes a little advancement in Krishna consciousness, then that there is no loss in that activity. So everything else we do in this world all becomes reverted back to zero. So ultimately all our activities at the end, by time, it is all taken away. But if we make a little advancement in Krishna consciousness, that continues. That's a permanent asset. And then in the next life, if we've made, you know, 10% to, you know, like that, 12%, we begin 12, 13, like that. So that, and gradually, so it's a permanent asset. Srila Prabhupada says, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is teaching that you just remain, we remain in our position. If we're a family type of a person, we remain in that situation. If we like to, you know, prefer to live without the encumbrance of, you know, family and just dedicate fully to spiritual life, there's brahmacharya, vanaprastha, sannyas. If we are a working person, then we remain in the type of work that suits, you know, we like to work with our intelligence or with our physical energy, you know, or creatively, then, you know, we do that work. So nothing is given up, but you just add Krishna. You just think of Krishna while you're doing it. So Srila Prabhupada says, so what is the loss in taking the Krishna consciousness? That we stay in the same position, so there's no loss. We don't have to give up anything like that. And you just think of Krishna while you're doing it. So there's no loss, but there's everything to gain. Minimum is that you definitely won't go into the animal kingdom, and whatever spiritual advancement, you know, 1% by percent, is gradually taking one to the position where one becomes a fully liberated person, where the subtle body, which is, you know, associated, you know, contaminated, impure, is giving us so many births, and, you know, our percentage increase in devotional service means we get to the point where the subtle body is, we're completely free from that, and there is no chance of taking birth in the material world at all, that one actually then is qualified to go back to the spiritual world. So that is the process of spiritual life, and that is called Mukta Linga. So, you know, the soul, our consciousness is contaminated or impure because of the, you know, associating with the material energy, and therefore there's a subtle covering of the material energy, that's our subtle body, is covering the soul. So originally, you know, water, when it's, you know, in the clouds, it is pure. And then gradually it comes down. So, you know, recently, you know, they had those schoolboys in, was it Thailand, Malaysia, somewhere, they got stuck in the cave. Right? And one was, you know, you were thinking, how would you survive for, you know, nearly 2 weeks or something without, you'd have to drink the cave water, which would definitely kill you. And then they revealed that, you know, the water, you know, as basically you come down from the rain, it was seeping through the stalactites, whichever, the ones that hang from the roof, and that was pure enough that they could drink that and survive, you see. So it hadn't yet touched the real murky, muddy waters within the cave. So gradually, you know, water is pure, starts from pure, and then it hits the ground, but then gradually becomes dirty, you know, like that. So it has to be purified. So the soul, the consciousness of the soul, again, it has to be purified from the contamination. And that purification process is Krishna consciousness. There are different, you know, forms of purification through karma yoga, jnana yoga, stanga yoga, bhakti yoga. But the most powerful and the most effective, the easiest, the quickest is bhakti. The other processes are like taking the stairs. If you're going to climb a, you know, 100-story building, you know, you can take the stairs. That's all the different rungs on the yoga ladder. Or Prabhupada says you can take the elevator. You're straight to the top. It's like just a few seconds. Like that. You hardly notice you're moving. So Krishna recommends, and Prahlad Maharaj, especially in Kali Yuga, actually, in Kali Yuga, we really have no other option. The other processes are not powerful enough, they're not quick enough, they're, you know, there's so many faults. One should take to bhakti. So here we're seeing that this process, bhaktim haro, and bhakti of course means to Bhagavan. Bhakti, there are three things. There's the bhakta, the devotee. There's Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, and bhakti, there is one's eternal, loving, serving relationship with Bhagavan. Bhagavan is sanatan, eternal. Bhakti is eternal, that is eternal activity of the soul. And the bhakta, spirit soul, that is sanatan, they're all sanatan. And that is called sanatan dham, or the eternal activity of the soul is bhakti. Other things, karma yoga, jnana yoga, you know, these are not the eternal activity of the soul. So, Bhagavan means Krishna. Because in the history of the entire world, and you can take all the different religious scriptures, you can take all the descriptions of demigods and great personality, you will not find anyone who even in the slightest way can compete with Krishna, what Krishna did. As far as Bhagavan means that he is the has a perfect and unlimited strength, knowledge, renunciation, beauty, opulence and fame. All the opulences that are possible within this world. So some people have one to some degree, some people have a couple, but not unlimitedly. Krishna showed all the opulences that is possible to an unlimited degree that is not Shiva, not Indra, not Brahma, not Vishnu, that no one could actually demonstrate. So, therefore, bhakti is, because Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, if we connect with him, he is the most powerful spiritual energy, force, person that it is possible to connect with. And therefore, a little connection with Krishna is so powerful that even if we approach Krishna with the wrong attitude, he is so purifying that we become completely pure. Just like the sun, Srila Prabhupada mentions, the sun is 93 million miles away. So, you know, there's a lot of objects floating around out in space. You know, and there's stars and meteors and the sun is 93 million miles away. But it is so powerful that even from that distance, a little connection and everything is there. Our entire existence on this planet depends upon the sun being so powerful that even from 93 million miles away, we are deriving all benefits. So powerful is the sun. So it's just, you know, sometimes, you know, there's that concept that, you know, if it's not personally within my, you know, range of experience, and you know, it has no value to me. You know, even when you can't see the sun, still the value is there. And if one learns to tap into the energies of the sun, so much, you know, benefit can be there. So, Krishna, he is Bhagavan. He is the source of all material and spiritual energies. He's the source of all avatars, all the demigods, all expansions of the Lord, all coming from Krishna. So powerful. And therefore, a little connection with Krishna is enough. And even there's some impurities. Personalities, Srila Prabhupada was giving one lecture, and he was explaining that, you know, and this is there within the Bhagavatam. Even personalities like Kamsa, they wanted to kill Krishna. So their connection with Krishna is, I want to kill you, Krishna. Krishna's association was so powerful, he got liberation. You have jnanis and yogis for thousands of births. Krishna says in the Gita, you know, that after many, many births, you know, that, you know, hardly anyone knows Krishna. You know, it takes hundreds of lifetimes to become Siddha, someone who just, you know, realizes I am a spirit soul. And then from there they have to gradually come to the point, you know, where they can act on that level. So many lifetimes. Kamsa, he just wants to kill Krishna, and he got that benediction. He got that result that they strive for, after, so powerful is Krishna. Here we see in the previous purports, Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted to gain a kingdom, so he wanted material opulence, and so powerful that now he's here, he's in this position, he's ready to go back to Godhead, become completely purified. So, therefore, somehow or another, if someone can contact Krishna, then that powerful purification effect takes place. Krishna is very, very merciful in that he comes and speaks the Bhagavad Gita. He comes and performs so many different pastimes. So all of the Vedic scriptures, which are compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, confirm that Krishna is Bhagavan. The compiler of the Vedic scriptures is Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva also compiled this Bhagavad Gita. And he is quite very strongly emphasizing Krishna's own words. So here's Srila Vyasadeva is presenting. I've compiled all the Vedic scriptures. Krishna is saying he's the Bhagavan. He's Bhagavan. I am confirming that. Every when Krishna is speaking, Srila Vyasadeva is saying, Shri Bhagavan Vacha. This is the topmost form of spiritual truth, Bhagavan, from which the Paramatma, Bhagavan, there is Satchidananda manifestation, Satchidananda Vigraha. You can realize fully eternity, full consciousness, and blissful life. Expanding from Bhagavan is Paramatma. In Paramatma feature, the jnanis and yogis, if they're fortunate, may realize eternality and consciousness. But because the soul is not engaged in loving relationship, then the ananda is not there. And in Brahman, that feature, they can experience the absolute truth, is sat. There is eternity. The personification of knowledge, the giver of knowledge, that we cannot appreciate like that. But in Bhagavan, one appreciates Satchidananda Vigraha because the opportunity is there is to engage in loving reciprocal pastimes on the spiritual platform. So this Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Shankaracharya, he actually acknowledges Krishna's Bhagavad Gita as the highest truth, and acknowledges Krishna is Narayan, and that before Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, before any material creation, there's Narayan, who is Krishna. So, this is confirmed by all the great sages. Krishna himself confirmed it. Krishna's activities confirm that he is Bhagavan. So, bhakti means that we engage in devotional service to Bhagavan. This nonsense philosophy that comes out of, India, unfortunately, that you can worship anyone, Bhagavan, God is within everyone, therefore you worship anyone and you're worshipping God. That is nonsense. In India, a lot of the population reject the Bhagavad Gita because they think that, well, you know, we have Bhagavad Gita and there's so much chaos. There's so many problems. So what is the use of this Bhagavad Gita? We've had the Bhagavad Gita for so many thousands, so many people are studying Bhagavad Gita, so many people are preaching Bhagavad Gita, and we have just chaos and problems. Someone asked Srila Prabhupada that. Why, you know, Krishna spoke in Bhagavad Gita, still there is chaos. You know, it's like, what is the value? And Krishna said, why should there not be chaos? Because you're not following Gita. Krishna says in the Gita, Ivam Parampara Praptam. You cannot understand Bhagavan as he is teaching about himself in the Gita by scholarship. You can only understand Bhagavan through Bhagavad Gita by the grace of Krishna through bhakti. Because these are the revealed scriptures. Revealed scriptures means that by the certain process of studying them through the parampara, through those who are devotees, Bhagavan reveals himself. Here I am. But through scholarship, that is not possible. Actually, I was at someone's house the other day doing a mundan. And during the mundan, you know, I usually talk to the children. So the little boy is about 4 or 5 years old. And I was telling him about Krishna, you know, being God, and he made the sun and the moon and so many things. So then, for a second there, he called over to his father and said, Dad, what is Krishna? And his father said, oh, Krishna is imaginary. It just shocked me, you know. They sort of invited me here. I've set up, I've done a whole worship, I've, you know, spoken from Gita, and, you know, right in front of me, I've got the Shalagram on the altar. I'm thinking, you know, block Shalagram's ears, you know, there's a fence right in front of the Shalagram. So anyway, I thought, I have to counteract this offence, you know, because I don't want to come here and they go backwards. So at that stage, his friend, the man, the householder, his friend arrived to come and see the haircut. And I asked him, do you read Gita? He said, I've been trying to find a Gita. And I've been thinking I might go to the temple. And I thought to myself, you know, I've got my, all I have is my personal copy of the Gita. And I said, you can buy this off me. So actually I had to go out of the car. When I came back in, the person who's saying Krishna's imaginary, he's distributed two Gitas written, it's called My Gita. I don't know if you've ever seen it. My Gita. And he's given one to his friend and one to someone else who's there. And I said, what is this? Oh, this is a very famous Gita, you know, given by some great scholar in India. And I said, but Krishna says you cannot understand Gita by scholarship. Let me see that. So I grabbed the book. I flicked to it. I said, no, this is not Gita. This is his interpretation. My Gita means this is my interpretation, which means he's speaking something completely different to Krishna, which means it's not the Gita. And he tried to argue, no, this is not the Gita. And then, you know, so, you know, I'm thinking, right, Krishna is imaginary, but you must read this imaginary interpretation of the Gita. Huh? It doesn't matter, you can think anything you like about Krishna. You know, I can imagine this, this scholar can imagine that, this one can imagine that, but you must read this imaginary. Huh? What is that? That means, you know, there's something cheating there, isn't it? You know, you can imagine, my son, you can imagine anything you want, like that. But you must imagine it my way. So that's cheating. So then I said, no. You know, you have a look at this first verse, the Gita. It was spoken, you know, at Kurukshetra. And, you know, people imagine that, you know, they, in their imagination, they say, you know, the body represents Kurukshetra, and the five senses represent the Pandavas, and Krishna represents the soul. None of them actually existed, and it's all imaginary. You can make some, you know, philosophy like that. So, anyway, this person was really, and I showed, and there's the Sanskrit word for word, with the translation for each word, so you can see what's actually in it. Not someone, you know, you don't even know how they're interpreting. There's a translation, and Srila Prabhupada putting in context, so you're hearing from a devotee in the line of parampara, which Krishna wanted, and he was really happy. He gave me a little donation, kept the Gita like that. So, you know, so Prabhupada said, it's because you're not following Krishna's instruction that this Gita must be heard in the parampara system, then it will take effect. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. Then you have chaos because you're not following Krishna. You're studying Gita, you're reading, you know, everyone's bogus interpretations, but Krishna says you must follow in parampara to understand Gita. And if you don't, then there's chaos. And Srila Prabhupada, when he was in Bombay, he said, my challenge is this, that we are giving Bhagavad Gita in the parampara system, and we are getting thousands of people all over the world who are becoming on the path of pure devotional service. They're dedicating everything to Krishna, becoming detached from everything in the material world, and dedicating their whole lives to Krishna. He said, these people, they don't even know about Krishna. It's not like they've heard about him from their fathers. Somehow they've come into contact with Krishna for the first time, you know, basically in this lifetime. And yet, because they're hearing Gita, so many people are becoming, you know, proper devotees of Krishna. And he said, here, he was speaking in Bombay, here in Bombay, you are speaking with hundreds and hundreds of different copies of the Gita for hundreds and hundreds of years, and you have not made one pure devotee. You bring me one devotee, I will see. You bring me one pure devotee. And we know when Srila Prabhupada was in India, he travelled the length and breadth of India trying to find someone who would dedicate their life to Krishna and assist him in spreading Krishna consciousness. He couldn't find anyone. He had to leave the country. Yes, yeah, we follow Gita, but, you know, we want to, you know, serve Indra and Shiva and you know, Ganesh and like that. And this is how we follow Gita. No. You serve Krishna and his Archavigraha, like that. These worship of the demigods, this is for those with, you know, distorted intelligence, you know, material desires. So, this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke Gita, and Srila Prabhupada says that, you know, if you read one verse of the Gita, you're reading it in parampara, as we do, you're reading Bhagavad Gita as it is, one verse, Krishna is fully present. You immediately contact Krishna. He says there is no difference between Krishna and that verse of the Gita. There's no difference. Krishna is completely, fully present. So someone, and here we're saying, somehow or another, someone has to contact Krishna. One may think, oh, that is a very, very difficult thing to find out Krishna. Very, very, how do we find Krishna? These books are being distributed all over the world. Practically, you walk down the street, you have to go out of your way to walk through Melbourne and not get a Gita. You'll have to cross the road several times. I remember there was one temple president in Wellington, Sabal, who's a Prabhupada disciple. He used to do that. When the devotees would come past, they would cross the road and they'd be drinking their beer and they'd throw their cans at the devotees. He ended up a temple president. But You know, he was going out of his way, but you know, he was hearing the kirtan and he became purified, even though he wanted to, you know, throw cans at the devotees. So somehow or another, if someone comes into contact, when the devotees go down the street and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna is fully present there because their chanting is coming in the line of Parampara. And Krishna is fully present there. In the Archivigari, we've heard in the previous verses, you know, there are temples, you know, there's about 400 so many, you know, temples and then other, you know, centres, and they have deities and then pictures of Krishna. Krishna is fully present there in the Archivigari. Prabhupada says, you know, don't think that this is stone or you know, wood. When he was in Jagannath Puri, he was saying that, you know, people come, you know, thousands, millions of people come. Do you think they're coming here to see some wood? Everyone knows Jagannath is carved out of wood, Prabhupada said. The temple is made out of stone. Do you think people are so foolish? Oh, there's some wood, you know, on a platform. Let us go see, there's some wood there. In a stone building. And he said, you know, in America, he said also, these Americans, they have skyscrapers and you know, their buildings so wonderful. You think they want to come and see one of our stone buildings? This is so impressive. He was speaking in Vrindavan. But they're coming from all over the world to Vrindavan. Why? Because Krishna is present. They're not coming to see stone wall. They're not so foolish. So, somehow or another, if someone contacts Krishna, Prabhupada tells the story, you know, what to speak of devotees who are nicely chanting, you know, and serving Krishna. Prabhupada tells the story of there was one person who was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, and this thief happened to be hearing. And they were telling about, oh, you know, in Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda, she is decorating Krishna and Balaram with all the beautiful gold and rubies and pearls and so many things like that. And he was thinking, oh, so they're there in Vrindavan, it's Shama Shunda. So I will go there. After all, they're just little boys. I will steal from them. If I have to, I'll kill them. So he went there thinking that somehow or another I'm going to get all this jewelry, whether I have to kill them or what have you, maybe I'll kidnap them, but I'm going to. So he went there, and actually he was, you know, everywhere looking for Shama Shundra, and so Krishna actually appeared to him. So kind. And he says, Krishna Balaram, I want to take these jewels. And Krishna said, no, my mother will be very unhappy. I give you all these jewels. My mother was very unhappy. I do not have permission. So, you know, anyway, a long story cut short, he became a pure devotee. But because he was associated with Krishna, he gave up being a thief and he became a pure devotee Krishna. So attracted he was to Krishna. He became so attracted. Krishna is like that. Actually, Krishna is so attractive that, you know, I think Rupa Goswami says, you know, if you want to maintain, you know, your enjoyment in this material world, whatever you do, don't go to the bank of the Jamuna and look at the beautiful form of Krishna. Don't do that. Because if you do, your material life will be finished. When you hear about, you know, the beautiful Jamuna River, how Krishna is sported in the beautiful print, who wouldn't want to, you know, people go on holiday, they try and find a little bit of nature somewhere in this world left. For a few days, they work all year and save up. If I just get a few days and I can hear the, you know, by the water somewhere, and there's some open skies and some peaceful, and the birds are singing and the fish and the dolphins in the water and like that. If I can just get a little bit of that, all the struggle in my life can be worth it. And here, Vrindavan, the entire, you know, eternally, it is like that. Here, to get a little bit of that, you go to the caravan parks, and there's this much room between each caravan. And they're so stressful you know, in they're packed in, you know, to these on the foreshore, and then you see the antennas go up because they can't really move around freely, so they stay in their caravan and they watch TV. And because if they go out in the sun too much, they get burnt. And then there's the flies and the sand and so many things. So they just, oh, I'm just going to stay here. And then they go out and the children drive them nuts. So, but they hear about Vrindavan. Wow, that's actually the place I'm searching for. That's it. That's the place that my heart is yearning for, Vrindavan. Oh, why did you tell me about Vrindavan? And this beautiful form of Krishna. Krishna is so beautiful. Always remember this, that, you know, before I ever knew who Krishna was, before reading Gita, before knowing that any devotees, as an artist, you know, I used to paint things and I'd run out of ideas. I wanted some inspiration to paint something wonderful, beautiful, original, unique. And I went all the galleries in Melbourne, you know, for a couple of days, and then I went home disappointed. I didn't see anything. No. And then I was in an opportunity shop on the Mornington Peninsula, and as I was walking out, just in the back corner, in the dark, above a shoe rack and things like that, I just noticed this sort of picture, and it just caught my eye, and I went back, and I looked at it, and there's this picture of Krishna, you know, sitting on a rock, playing his flute. He's got the beautiful, I'm trying to, is it a boy or is it a girl? It's so beautiful, you know, and the nice jewelry decoration and, you know, the beautiful clothing and, you know, the natural trees, and there's some water in the background. I think there's a moon or something. And then this deer, I think it is. You know, I thought, that's it. That is the most beautiful scene I've ever seen in my life. And then I went back home and I thought, I can't do a painting because, you know, that scene is it. That is the perfection of beauty. I understood, you know, actually I got that picture. Murulika. And I understood that is the most beautiful thing that my heart is yearning for, like that. And I kept thinking, who is that person? Who, you know, painted that? Where was this, you know? What is this place? Like that. So without anyone saying, oh, you know, Krishna is beautiful, you accept that. That is parampara. Guru says. Gita says, Krishna, you know, just seeing Krishna, I experienced myself. No, in this world, you will not see anything like that. See? So, you know, therefore, somehow or another, if we can contact Krishna, and he is so powerful, he's Bhagavan, then the soul becomes completely purified of the subtle body. There is no more attachment to this world. And one develops these, you know, wonderful transcendental spiritual, the heart melts in spiritual ecstasy. Everyone wants that, you know. Our hearts are so filled with burning up, our hearts are burning with and full of muck. Who would love to have the pure heart that's melting with loving sentiments like that for Bhagavan? Is it? So always transcendental, always in ecstasy. So, but of course, these symptoms that we see in Prahlad Maharaj, in Dhruva Maharaj, you know, we're very fortunate that personalities like Srila Prabhupada, they, you know, in our parampara, so many nice devotees who exhibit these full, you know, Ashta Sattvika Vichara. But to preach, they don't show those symptoms because then everyone will imitate. Actually, to preach the Paramahamsa, the Uttama Arakari, the Maha Bhagavat, such as Srila Prabhupada, they behave like the Majjhima Arakari. Follow the rules and regulations very nicely, dress, you know, in the dhoti, you know, the women in the sari, of course, tilak, you know, the beads, you know, worshipping the deity, like that. To preach, because they're teaching, do as I say and do as I do. So therefore, you know, but we see the symptoms are still there. You know, and you see that also in very advanced devotees, that they do not want to waste one second of time that they're not thinking of Krishna, not serving. You can see that love is there, you know, that attachment to Krishna, that Śrīla Prabhupāda, not one second will I lose that I can't be with the one. So you know, that is a symptom of love, that you know, when prema is there, then you can think of Krishna all the time. So by following the teachings of the pure devotees, those who have achieved that platform, the regulative principles, gradually this pure state of the soul, the pure devotional service will manifest, love of God will manifest, and that person, the subtle body, is completely dissolved, even though you're still in that same body. And while living in this world, one is in a mukta linga or jivan mukta. I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Good. All right, so next thing is Prasada. Jai.